Hello, this is Ian James Corlett, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to Pixels in the Animation. I am one of your hosts, TFG on Mike. Joining me is TV's Mr. Neil.
Hello.
And Steve Megatron.
Hello.
Hello. In the latest Pixels in the Animation interview, we welcome Mega Man himself, Ian James Corlett.
Yay! I'm cheering for myself. Yay! I have no applause sound effects, so.
The sad thing is, I actually put yay in the script in favor of Kermit the Frog.
Hi-ho!
Nice.
Kermit the Frog here.
I forgot we have two Kermits. Lord. So, Ian, how have you been?
I've been fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been about 6 years in a different podcaster. So it was April. Oh my God, it's almost 6 years. Almost 5 years to the day. April 23rd of 2010.
Holy cow.
is when we interviewed you for our Beast Wars Beast Machines podcast. I so did not plan this, folks.
Kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. So for those of you who are listening to Pixels in the Animation, episode 47 through... Yeah, 47 and 57 is going to be our Mega Man coverage. And Ian, just to let you know, basically Neil and I started Pixels in the Animation, and we basically go through various different video game cartoons. Some we review every single episode of a cartoon, others we don't. We've suffered through Super Mario Brothers Super Show, we've suffered through some other things, and we're finally here, and we're finally in 1994 in Mega Man. So let's catch up with you. What have you been doing lately? Are there any projects that you're currently working on that maybe people wouldn't get so mad at you if you spilled the beans or anything like that?
That is a loaded question, but I'm always loaded. So let's see. Projects that I've worked on in the last year or so that may or may not be in the public domain. Did a really fun series called Dr. Dimension Pants, where I played.
What is that about?
It's really weird. It's about a speaking unicorn and a kid who finds this pair of pants that gives him. Not magical powers. Well, they're kind of magical. They can transport them all over the place. And so it's this young kid, his talking unicorn with a weird, British accent. And I'm one of the villains, and I just had a blast doing it. I hit the microphone again. What's the matter with me? I'm supposed to be a trained professional. Anyway, the character I played is the Cortex, and it's hilarious. If you get a chance to see it, I don't even think it's, I think it's running on Teletoon in Canada, and I don't know about where it's playing anywhere else. Other shows that I'm involved in is Ninjago, and currently I'm known as Master Chen. And there's a storyline that's either just completing or unfolding on that. And I'm another character in the upcoming series of Ninjago, which I probably can't talk about. But I will say It's not Master Chen, and it's not Scales, so I'm another guy.
Okay.
What else? For you preschool animation fans, we're doing more Dinosaur Train, and that's always fun because I love Craig Bartlett, the creator of that show. What else? Pac-Man is out there and running. We finished that last year. Let's see. Gee.
Let's do some IMDb truth or true or false here.
Ooh, okay.
It says that you are going to be the voice of Sly Cooper in 2016 Sly Cooper animated film. Is that true or false?
Sure.
That's what it says.
I know. Now here's the wicked truth of that.
Okay.
I was in recording something for Rainmaker. And it was the Ratchet and Clank movie. And I was doing a bunch of supplemental voices and, you know, ton of characters here and there for that. And in the same session, they said, we want you to do this other thing. Have a look at this script. I think it was like a day before. And I read this character. And full disclosure, and I know the fans are going to go, what? They're not going to believe this. I had no idea who Sly Cooper was. None. Zero. No idea. Didn't know it was a pre-existing character. Didn't know it was a giant game. Didn't know there was this huge fan base. I went, oh, okay. I get that guy. I see what he is. So I read for it and I get it. And they say, oh, well, we're going to tack this on to the end of the session, the movie session. And we're doing kind of a trailer. Okay, cool. So I was in there, and I think Lee Tokar and a couple other guys. And we did this trailer, and I totally forgot about it. And then about 6 months later, I start seeing this percolating and bubbling and excitement online. Sly Cooper, Sly Cooper, Ian, Sly Cooper. And I went, what the heck? What are you talking about? And then I realized what I had done. And it is a pretty cool trailer, but whether it has any relevance to the actual movie project, I cannot tell you. And it's not because I don't want to tell you. It's because I don't know. It seems like they were teasing it just to see how much action they could get out of it. And maybe, you know, a pre-sale or something like that. But I can tell you this, as far as I know, there's nothing in production. So if they are planning on releasing it in 2016, it better be happening now. And I don't think it is, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
They so might just use someone else. Like, oh, you know what? Ian did a great job for that trailer, but, Ryan Reynolds will sell more tickets.
So they're almost teasing it a la kind of the Deadpool, like, animated bit.
Yeah.
Just to kind of gauge interest.
Yep. I think so.
That's crazy.
I saw it. I thought it was kind of cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, when I finally saw the trailer, I went, oh, that is awesome. I wish I kind of knew that going into it. I would have tried harder. No, I'm kidding.
I'm sure you try very hard at every session.
I give a solid 53%.
Come on now.
No, that's not true. I'm quite well known for my 75% rule. And it's not that I don't care about projects. It's the 75% correlate rule is all about self-preservation. And because I've seen guys, especially with the, you know, the anime style and action shows, I've seen guys that just give and give and give and give and give until literally, and I'm not using that word incorrectly, literally their throat is bleeding. And, you know, from all the screaming and battle stuff and everything. And I just go, you guys, and they're usually younger than me. Some of them aren't. Don't do it. Cap it at 75, you know, push the odd 80, 85 when you really need to scream. But, you know, blowing your voice out for 4 hours might just screw the rest of your week. So you know, I don't, it's not out of laziness. It's pragmatism. So that's, you can quote me on the 75% rule of Corlett.
Yeah, just imagine if it was still the '80s and there were 12-hour Wally Burr sessions, you wouldn't need any anime sessions.
Yeah, exactly. It was that kind of thing. Just... it's exactly that kind of thing. I'm happy to say that I don't think I did more than one or two Wally Burr sessions. I guess I just wasn't his kind of guy.
I have witnessed the guy in action at a Transformers convention, and he actually did that with fans auditioning for the
script.
For the fan script. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
They had to tell him to move on because he was dragging on the auditions for too long, trying to get multiple takes out of everyone.
Well, that's Wally.
That's... I also found out, now I have not actively watched this series, I probably should at some point, but you are the animated voice of Salem the Cat from Sabrina's Secret, what is it called, Sabrina's
the teenage,
Secret...
Your Secret, yeah. Yes, I am.
Sabrina's Secret Life, there you go. Did you have any interaction with Nick Baquet before doing it, or did they give you a voice sample and say, hey, this is what he sounded like?
Nope.
In okay, so they just wanted you to give your own take.
Yeah, I mean they did reference it, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to imitate him. He can imitate me. No, I'm kidding. No, it was an opportunity for me to do one of my favorite kinds of voices, and I'm basically doing Paul Lynde, and. I love that kind of character. And I think what happened, which is what happens a lot of the time, you'll get a spec sheet come out with an audition. And it says, you know, we're looking for this kind of voice and here's the reference and here's the, you know, the guy that did it on TV and try this, this or this. And they'll, you know, name off two or three famous voices that they kind of think, you know, might fit. And what I try to do because I'm a jerk is just ignore all that and go, okay, who is this character? What does he look like? What does he do? And then go, I'm going to do my thing. And what happens is let's use a really, really, really broad example. Let's say an audition comes out. And it says, you know, this is the voice of Thor. And, you know, we're thinking kind of a Schwarzenegger kind of voice. And then you see the copy. And the producers will sit down, they'll hold a casting session, and then they're going to sit down and listen to 50 guys who are all going, blah, 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 I'm like Ani, look, listen to me. I can do a better Ani than you. And then... I come along and go, guess what? I didn't want to do Arnie. And you do a voice like this and they go, boom, that's perfect. It's funny and it's weird and it's different. And then you get the role.
That's awesome.
That is very awesome.
So since we're talking about video game based cartoons, are you a fan of video games? Have you ever played any?
Yes, I have. But, you know, that ship sailed for me so long ago. I never embraced it to the level that I know that it is in the pop culture. I mean, I had like the first Atari video game system in like 79 or whenever it came out, the sort of wood grained one. That had Frogger in it or I think, I don't even know if it had Frogger, but I know it had Pong. So I played all that stuff and I went through a period up until the mid 90s when I would play a PC game that was, I really like sports simulations. I was never really into like the role playing or the shooting stuff too much. So I would play like NHL 95. And at the time, that was an awesome game. But I found that it was just taking me away from other important things. And then we had kids and I went, oh my goodness, I can't sit there. I couldn't do it as entertainment. I mean, I was entertained by it, but I just felt guilty. I felt really guilty because, you know, my entertainment vice is movies. And, you know, if I'm going to do something for 2 hours, my choice was to, you know, pick a great movie and watch that. Now, having said that, my son, we were really, really cautious. And this is sort of a big, long answer to say that I'm not really a gamer. But we were also really, really cautious about getting game consoles when the kids were young, because we could see what it did to them. Like, my son would go over to a friend's house who had free access to video games, and the guy would come back and his eyes would be swirling around. I mean, he was just like a little zombie. So we were really careful about that. We didn't get a game system until the Wii. So now you're sort of getting the timeline here, right? And the Wii made sense because I went, you know what? I can justify this. The kids can play it. They get up off the couch. They're moving around. It's not as passive as a video game, standard video game system, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of opened the door. And of course, now we got a PS4 and I love driving games. So, you know, we've got Gran Turismo and I got a steering wheel and it was funny. Just this week, I went, oh man, I want to go down and play Gran Turismo on the giant screen. But then I went, oh no, I've got work to do. So forget it. Yeah. So that's kind of my feeling on video games. I really, I respect them, and they're just, some of them are so awesome, but I can't personally dive in because I just can't do it.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that was really what you asked.
No, it was, that's what I asked.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Getting into some kind of Mega Man questions. Since Mega Man was 2 years before Beast Wars, was it kind of different or interesting reuniting with most of the Beast Wars cast for that show?
Yeah, I mean, you know, voice acting in Vancouver, as it is in LA, is a fairly, you know, the people who are doing it at the top, it's a fairly narrow pool. So you end up seeing many of the same faces a lot. And it was the weirdest thing about Mega Man was that I did the voice of Dr. Wily back in the Nintendo days. And then Scotty McNeil comes in and he's playing Dr. Wily. And I'm going, well, just why don't you just do the voice I did? I used to really bug him about that. hey, just here, Scott, this is the way you do it. And then I would do my old Wily and he would act like he was mad. And then we would fake fight and all of that stuff. But it was a similar kind of group that ended up doing Beast Wars. It is kind of neat. It's sort of, I've always referred to it a little bit like family, but I don't mean like, you know, brothers and sisters. It's sort of like cousins and uncles and aunts, some of which who are weird. And you go, oh yeah. Oh, we're going to have that family thing. Oh, I wonder if so-and-so is going to be there. Oh, that should be good. So it's like fun, weird family. And I mean that with the utmost respect.
Yeah, because I mean, almost everybody, most of everybody was in Mega Man that showed up in Beast Wars. There was you, there was Gary, there was Scotty. I think, who else? I know David wasn't there.
Was Alec Willows? I don't think Alec Willows.
No, I don't remember Alec doing a voice on it. all right. As far as getting the role of Mega Man, was it just a normal audition, or was it something that, like, your agent may have pointed out to you, or?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, it's really only been the last handful of years that I've had an agent.
Oh.
The scene here was so odd, the way it developed, that I didn't have one, and I didn't really need one. Because the history of Vancouver voice grew out of commercials. So it was kind of a tight-knit voice community that did commercials. And when the animation work started coming to Vancouver, the companies went to the people who cast commercials. And the way it was done here was, you know, there was kind of a list, and you know, if you got onto that list, that A list, you would just get phoned and, hey, we got a commercial. It's for McDonald's, and we need a young guy, an old guy, and a guy who sounds like he's from England. You know, oh, okay. Well, I know what I'll do. I'll phone Gary, Bill Ryder, and we'll get that Ian Corlett guy, that kind of thing. And you'd show up and do the work. So when the animation work came in, that was really my first taste of auditioning, because there wasn't a whole lot of auditioning before that. And it's an anomaly. This is not the way Hollywood works. It's not the way Toronto works, even. But in Vancouver, that is the way it worked for quite a period of time. It's totally different now. And everything is auditioned for, which actually is a little annoying, because there's some, you know, tiny commercial jobs that you should just get a phone call and just, okay, let's get so-and-so, get him in. It's going to be great. We're going to put those people together and it'll be hilarious. But it doesn't work that way anymore. So to answer your question, sorry, I sort of went around the horn of South America and back again. But it was a quote-unquote normal audition, but I was very aware of Mega Man, because it was very popular. I mean, it was not something that was kind of, oh, that's kind of fringy, or I haven't heard of that. Like, to be honest, Beast Wars was a little bit less, I don't want to say important, but I felt like, oh, they're redoing Transformers, that old cartoon. Oh, that's interesting. And I really did not understand that there was a giant fan base for Transformers. But I did know that Mega Man was really popular. So it might have been a little bit the opposite, where I felt like, oh, wow, Mega Man, that would be cool, because that's a character that everyone knows. And when Beast Wars came up, I don't even think when I initially read it that I knew that it was connected to Transformers, because it was animals and, you know, Sometimes I'm not paying attention, right?
Come on now. Give yourself a little bit more credit than that.
I will.
Come on.
I will. But I'm saying my very initial, oh, Beast Wars. Oh, okay. It's a bunch of animals and they're interplanetary and, oh, interesting. And then the light bulb kind of came out. Oh, okay. I get it. This is Transformers. But I did not realize. Because remember, this is in the early days of the interwebs. So it's not like you could really plug into, oh, what's the fan base like for this? It would have been, you know, magazines and you know, maybe some online presence, but not huge. Whereas Mega Man was, oh, I know what Mega Man is. That's still kind of happening. So that was the difference for me between the two.
Very cool, very cool. Did you audition for any other roles on the series that you didn't end up getting or anything like that?
Oh yeah, every single one of them. That's what you do. You want to hedge your bets, right? Because I mean, if every voice actor said, "I know the character I want to be, and I'm going to read for that one," you wouldn't get many roles. So, I mean, I can't tell you which ones, but because there was a billion of them, right? There was Cutman and Fartman and Boogerman and Roboman. No, I'm kidding, because you guys know all of them. But
I read
for all of them, and when I found out I was shortlisted or, you know, cast, as Mega Man and his dog, Bruff. That was fantastic. I just went, wow, score.
Yeah, Rush is awesome. I love Rush.
Yeah, I like doing him.
Oh, man. It's so funny. You were also Snake Man on that series, so you were both a hero and a villain.
Yes, that's the best. and the most fun. Oh yeah, you know what? That made me think of something. A show that's coming out. It's not even on the air in Canada yet. It's called Pirate Express. It's kind of a weird title, but I do two characters. That's what made me think of it. I play Poseidon, mm-hmm. King of the Seas, and his mm-hmm. assistant Gordon. And they're. It's a comedy, so it's not like one's a hero and one's a villain, but they're very different guys and they talk to each other a ton. So that was really fun to do last year because I would do like pages of dialogue where it's the two of me talking to each other. And
so basically you had your own Frank Welker moment.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And then there was a couple of episodes where I played Poseidon's nephew as well. So I had a three-way going, if you know what I mean. That's what we call it in the voice business.
Scott McNeil moment.
Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, no, not usually, not these days. Had you ever played any of the Mega Man games before going into the role or anything? I mean, I know we've already established that you said you're not a gamer, but...
You know,
did you ever look at any of them or anything like that?
No, I honestly, I know it's not, doesn't make for a very good story, but I didn't, I was well aware of it in pop culture, like well aware. I just didn't partake.
What were those voice sessions like?
Oh, those are pretty funny. They were pretty fun. That was it. That we recorded those at Ocean Studios, and I mean that was insane. There was like a real fun group that you know, if two or three of us were on each show, which often we were, it was like kindergarten. It was just insane. You know, like every time you're probably aware, you know, when we record a show, you'll do a scene. And it'll be, you know, maybe 2.5 pages long, and lots of people are involved in the dialogue, and you read it sort of like you would a classic radio play. So it's pretty much live, and everyone's playing their part. And then at the end of the scene, it's like, okay, cut. And then the producers discuss what they liked, what they didn't like, and then you're going to get some notes, and we're going to take it again, or we're going to, you know, maybe record individual lines, one or two of them again. But in those breaks, there would be, it was in the early days of paper recycling. So there was a box of paper that was, you know, old scripts and stuff. And as soon as that button would go down, okay, good, thanks, hang on. And we knew we had between 15 and 30 seconds where, you know, the people in the other room were going to be talking about something. Didn't involve us, and a paper war would break out. Everyone would grab a piece of paper, you know, ball it up as tight as you could, and huck it, wing it at the heads of whoever else was in the room while trying to avoid the microphones. So to this day, oh yeah, and there was also paper airplanes involved. So, you know, just to add some added danger to try and poke someone's eye out. But to this day, if you go into that studio and look up, they have these hanging, it's like a baffle that hangs, you know, 4 feet down from, the ceilings are really tall. So they have these baffles that hang down, and they're suspended. So it's like a 4x4 piece of wood frame with fabric stretched around it to kind of absorb reflections of sound. So those there's three or four of those things hanging from the ceiling. And if you look up, you will see paper up there. Like there's still paper hanging over because no one's going to climb up and clean up there. Or, well, maybe they should. Right. But not at Ocean. And it's the funniest thing when I go back in there, I look up. Oh yeah, it's still there. Isn't that weird?
How many times did you get one in on Gary or Scott?
Oh, loads. Gary was the most fun to torture because he dished it out. And you know, Gary's one of those guys. He's a classic performer, right? When he's on, and he likes to hold court, and he commands the room. And when he's talking, he's the only one talking. But it's so easy to get under his skin because, you know, unless someone stops him, he just goes and goes and goes and goes. And then I'm going to tell you about this. And then I'm going to tell you this. And then I'm going to tell you that. And then I'm going to tell you. And it's all very funny to us. And we would always subvert him. I had a great, in the day, I had a great Gary Chalk impersonation and would basically parrot most of what he would say just to get the other actors laughing. And then Gary, you know, he was not so full of himself that he didn't realize what was going on, and he would eventually just laugh his head off with us. So,
so.
Oh, and he's pretty gassy too.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, I think that's well known in folklore, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So, do you really enjoy recording ensemble with other actors, or do you love more, you know, being in the booth by yourself, doing all the voices, talking to yourself, or?
You know what? I'll take it either way, because if the cast is fun and clicking and, you know, everyone's tuned in, it's pretty cool. But having said that, I love getting the work done. I really love it. Was sort of like school, right? Like I used to sit in school and go, oh my goodness, there is so much time being wasted. If I could just get this done, I could, you know, cover this course in a month. And I haven't changed much. So when it's a show that, you know, maybe is a little bit less fun, I just love getting a call and going, oh, you know what? We couldn't make the schedule work out, so we're going to bring you in Tuesday morning, and I can get through. I can be in and out in record time. And it's, I'm not, well, yeah, sure. I am patting myself on the back there. I'm saying, cause I get it. I've done it for a long time. I know what's happening in the script, and, you know, I can bang off three versions of every line. And, one of those three, the director's going to go, oh, great. Moving on. So I do the next three. Great, moving on. So I like that, but it's also really fun when it's a great group of people in the cast. And more often than not, it is a good group. So, you know, how's that for a hedgy kind of waffly answer? I like both.
Perfect. Now, I heard you mention Paul Lynde's name earlier, and I love Paul Lynde. I love old character actors like that, like Jack Benny and all those guys.
Yeah.
Are those your influences? Who are your influences, by the way?
Well, my number one voice influence is not Mel Blanc, because that's the go-to answer for absolutely everyone.
Yes.
And maybe I'm doing this just to prove that I was really into voices way before there was ever a notion of doing voices for a living or the work coming to Vancouver. It was Dawes Butler, and Dawes Butler did lots and lots of cartoon work, but I knew him from Stan Freberg. And yes. Stan Freberg was a, you know, kind of a, today he'd be like a hipster comedian, and they did these radio style shows, comedy stuff, and it was really funny. And we used to listen to it when we would go on family road trips. It was old. I mean, it was really old when we were listening to it. But I just remember, you know, like St. George and the Dragon, And there was this guy, this one guy, and it was Dawes Butler. And he, in St. George and the Dragon, you can look it up. It was a parody of the old TV radio show called Dragnet, and they did Dragonnet. So it was St. George. It was a procedural. It was a police procedural, and these two detectives are looking for this fire-breathing dragon. And at one point in the sketch, they knock on the door, you know, and the guy answers, "Hello?" And he says, "Sir, I understand you've seen a dragon."
"Yeah."
"And who? What's your occupation?"
"I'm a knave."
And this was Dawes Butler, and I love that guy's voices. Because I guess I was a little kid, but I felt like I sounded like him. So he was like a huge influence on me just in the style of comedic voices. And of course, yeah, Mel Blanc was huge, but I'm like a climate denier. It's like, yeah, he was fantastic. But, you know, when you get right down to it, and it's not taking anything away from Mel, because he was phenomenal. But if you closed your eyes and you didn't watch the cartoon, so many of those voices are so similar. But he was so good at just giving a little twist and a little nuance and that's where the acting comes into it, right? It's not doing a funny voice. It's the actual character of a voice that Mel Blanc was so good at. So, you know, I guess I want to say my influence is someone other than, you know, the godfather of all of us, which was Mel. And it was Dawes Butler. But there's lots and lots of guys that I really look up to and really respect. And, you know, Frank Welker is another one that's just he's kind of like on another plane. And there are some guys, there's some younger guys too, that are similar to him in that they just kind of, they inhabit and they have these really odd, almost sound effect kind of voices that they do. And those guys are, you know, really exceptional. My thing is comedy and realism. And it's surprising, actually, the amount of projects now where big, funny characters are not really what they're looking for. And that's going to change. I mean, it's like fashion, you know. But so I don't get a chance to do really big, stupid characters that often. But I did in Dr. Dimension Pants in Pirate Express. So I guess maybe that's why I like those ones, too.
Very cool. Very cool. Yes. I have to bring this up since I don't know when we'll have you back on the show. This isn't necessarily related to Mega Man, but since you were the father, I have to ask, is Johnny Test really over with?
Oh, good question.
You don't know, do you?
I don't. I don't, you know, and it's not like I, you know, when we finished episode of the last season, which was season, I don't even remember now. What is it? Seven?
Six. Yeah.
Scott Fellows and company were saying, "Oh yeah, no, we're doing more. We just trying to figure out the financing and the scheme and the this and the that, the da ba ba dee." And that was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay, well in the summer, oh, that'll be good if that comes back, because I don't have a lot else going on, so that would be great. And nothing. And then more nothing. And then some more nothing. So your guess is as good as mine.
How old are your kids now?
Really old. They're 43.
No, oh, come on. Now. No, you're not. That's true. You are nowhere near that.
No,
come on now.
You are true. You are correct. My son, Philip, is 17, okay. And Miss Claire is 15.
Every time I watch an episode of Johnny Test and I hear Johnny's dad always yelling, I imagine that's the voice you use to yell at your kids.
Yeah, and you would imagine pretty much correctly.
Except, as a fan, I have to say that would be amazingly awesome to, to witness.
I usually when I'm not very serious, mm-hmm. I will drop into, I'm not doing Hugh Test. I just kind of drop into that kind of voice because that's my that's my go-to kind of dorky dad voice.
Yeah.
But I will. There's another one. There's another one I do when I'm calling Claire. Her middle name is Margaret. And do you guys watch or are you familiar with Little Britain?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, very absurd, very popular British comedy. And there's one sketch. Anyway, I won't go into the sketch. If you look it up, there's a library sketch. Mm-hmm. And it's the most ridiculous thing. A guy comes in, and the sketch is repeated several times. There's about five versions of it. But guy comes into a tiny little bookstore, and he asks for the most ridiculous titles of, you know, so specific that there wouldn't even be a book written on this. And the little shopkeeper always leans back and calls his wife, Margaret, Margaret. And you hear a voice from beyond kind of responding to him. Do we have a book on something? And sure enough, they do. So, I mean, that's the joke of the thing. But it's a long way to tell the story that when I'm calling Claire, I will often drop into that voice and use her middle name and just call Margaret, Margaret. So it is a common occurrence around these parts.
That's awesome. Neil, you had one other question you wanted to ask?
Well, it's not so much a question. It's more of me just kind of geeking out when I checked out his IMDb because I'm scrolling down and I see Captain N, Cap Candy, Dragon Ball, of course, all these all these roles that we know. And then I landed on this one that's got to be one of my favorite movies of all time, and you're probably going to cringe when I say this. It's Project Echo 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which I geeked out so hard because I'm like, oh, my God, he played this character that basically stole the whole movie. And I just remember laughing so hard. I know this is not really a question. It's just like it's more me just kind of like bowing for you just because I love the whole series. But that movie just cracked me up.
Well, thank you. I'm going to have to go back and look that one up because I know I did it. but this is the reality of, you know, when you work, you do a lot of stuff. And I remember the title. I remember the era, but honestly, I don't remember the character or anything. So I should go back and see what you responded to, because it sounds great. I'd love to.
Yeah. Basically you play the father of this bratty girl. Basically it's kind of a take on superheroes, sort of. The main character is, it's slyly implied that she's the daughter of Superman and Wonder Woman, but your character is kind of an analog to Lex Luthor, I guess. Mm. And you're just kind of this bombastic, I guess I can say, asshole, but he's so funny. And his daughter is like this big, she's like a genius mech designer, and he steals her designs, makes his own mech, and it's the ending is just bizarre and wonderful, and it's a funny movie.
Cool. Yeah. And it's supposed to be funny.
Oh yeah,
just checking.
Yeah.
Because some things are, you know, some projects are inadvertently funny. But that was not the case with this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the girls in the show was like, it was basically Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star in a dress, basically.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was one of the funniest. But yeah, that's basically all I had, Mike. It wasn't really a question.
That's quite all right. You're fair enough.
Yeah.
Steve. So if you could have the chance to go back to any franchise or series, whether it's like a newer rendition of it nowadays, to play any role, what would you kind of choose to do?
That's a good question. Ooh, you may have stumped the panel. the easy answer would be, maybe Sonic the Hedgehog. Because I really enjoyed doing Coconuts. It was just a fun character. And it was one of those moments in time where, I touched on this earlier, where I was talking about the kind of voices that mm-hmm. I love doing. And that one was one that I had in my back pocket and wanted so badly to find a show that it would work in. And Coconuts fulfilled that. So, plus it was really fun working with Phil Hayes and Gary Chalk because they're nuts. But so that part shows. Of it is the work environment, you know, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Just trying to think, there are shows that just plain, like flat out made me laugh when I was doing them. And I'm drawing a blank. I'm absolutely drawing a blank. So let's go with Sonic the Hedgehog.
Awesome.
Awesome. One final off-the-wall question here before we let you go. And I'm going to go back to something we already talked about.
Sure.
Do you make as many meatloafs as Hugh does?
No. That's a really easy answer. And as a matter of fact, I can probably count on two hands the number of meatloafs I have been personally responsible for. That was a pure invention of the demented mind of Scott Fellows.
So awesome. So would you like to inform the people where they can interact with you online?
I have a website that gets updated infrequently. And we're really proud of that.
If you need a new webmaster, I can recommend somebody.
No, it's not. It's not even about that. It's I have to tell someone what I'm up to. Oh yeah, that's right. It's no excuse. But anyway, ianjamescorlett.com. ianjamescorlett.com. There's stuff there. It's not always right up to date, but you can email me through that. I should be, listing, hey, I'm going to be at the so-and-so con at the so-and-so, but I don't even do that. But I will say on this podcast, I don't know when it's going to come out, but on the weekend of April 3rd, my daughter and I are going to be in San Francisco at BabsCon, which is Bay Area Bronies Con. So it's My Little Pony convention.
Yeah, because you were a voice on Friendship is Magic.
I was, yes. Finally.
What do you mean finally?
Well, I was begging and whining and complaining because my daughter's getting all this love from all these bronies, and I'm going, I gotta get on that show. That's the biggest freaking show that's come out of Vancouver in the last 5 years, and I didn't even get a sniff. So here I am, I'm complaining. I'm standing outside DHX and give me a job, because that's what I do, that's what works. And then finally, no, it's not the way it works. Not at all. But, and finally the right character came up. I just didn't hit the first major casting. So this character came up and I got to do a song and then I can accompany Claire on these show tours, because, you know, she's got to go with an adult anyway, so it's kind of a twofer. They get me for nothing. I feel like a real addendum to her. It's like, oh yeah, and then her dad.
We'll check on him.
Yeah. So here's Claire. Yeah. Oh, Claire, you're the greatest. Oh, you're the way. Oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. And then her dad. Huh? Who? And then there's guys like you. This was really funny. This is about two years ago. One of the first things we ever did. It was down in Seattle, so the whole family went down because it's not that far. And I'm being, you know, Mr. Chaperone guy. Like, that's what you do when you've got a child actor and they're at a convention. Mm-hmm. Either my wife or myself have to be there with her. So we're backstage in a, I guess they call it a green room or something, and it's full of super fans, right? Like, you guys know, right? What,
yeah,
you know, fandom. There's a type, right? And they're swarming around, and mostly they're fans of My Little Pony, but a lot of these guys are, sure, they're fans of My Little Pony, and they identify as bronies, et cetera, et cetera. But they're cartoon fans, and they're anime fans, and they're just fans. And it was the weirdest thing. So I'm kind of sitting a table away as my daughter's getting interviewed by someone. And these were VIPs. This is like the VIP area. So, you know, anyone who was back in this room was, you know, had a reason to be there. It wasn't like general public kind of thing. Right. So, you know, keeping a really low profile because, you know, what kind of a dorky dad would I be if I hovered over my daughter and went, hey, by the way, let's talk about me, you know, like that would be really stupid. So I'm keeping a super low profile. I'm watching and I see her. I can't hear what she's saying, but whoever she's being interviewed by, I, you know, she's talking to them, and then the guy's head turns and he looks over at me, and she's nodding and going blah, 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 and then points. And the guy looks over again. He looks at me, and I go, okay, I realize they're looking at me now. I wonder what that's all about. And then he leans over and tells some guy that he's with, and he points over at me. And it literally went through the whole room. And I went, what the heck is going on? And then Claire calls me over. She goes, Dad, come here, come here, come here. So I go over and I meet the guy, and he goes, you were Goku? And I said, yeah. Oh, my God. And then someone runs and gets another guy, and suddenly there's 10 people, like, just swarming me, and or more, actually. There's probably more than that. And it culminated in this one young guy who was the nicest guy. But he comes over and he is visibly shaking. And I went, hi, because they introduced me to him as Brad or something. And I said, hi. And he goes, I can't believe I'm talking to Goku. And he's sweating and shaking. And I'm going, relax, relax, man. It's like, yeah, I'm happy to meet you. And then someone says, oh, yeah, and he was Cheetor. And I thought the guy was going to faint. so that's why it's kind of fun for me to go to these things, because it's all about Claire, but there is a segment of the fandom that just goes, oh my gosh, that's Claire's dad, and, you know, they do the lineage, right? So it's really fun. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah. It was kind of like me 5 years ago when we first interviewed you. I remember off air, when we first picked up the call, I was like, holy crap, he sounds just like Cheetor. Well, it was one of those things where I'm not really, like, I wasn't sure because I never talked to you before. I hadn't seen any interviews with you or anything online. And I know your Cheetor voice, you know, immediately, as soon as I hear it on Beast Wars or even the darker version for Beast Machines. And, you know, you take someone like Gary. Gary Chalk's normal voice is not as deep,
right,
as Optimus Primal's. It's not as deep as Gutsman or anything like that. Sure. And I'm thinking, okay, well, Ian's normal voice has to be somewhat different than. And I'm like, holy crap, Cheetor just said hello to me. Holy crap, what the hell?
And that's why I felt like it was such a score when I got that thing, because I went, I'm just doing me. This is great. and I'll tell you why. I'm kidding, but I'm serious, because then I go, oh, this is fantastic, because there's my baseline voice. Now I can do other characters in this show, and the sky's the limit, because I haven't used up one of my good ones or my weird ones, even though it didn't really happen. I think I was I might have been a ship computer.
You were Sentinel.
Yes, I was Sentinel. Thank you. I remember there was a name attached to it, and I was racking my brain. But I don't think I got a chance to do much else than that. So, I was all happy for nothing.
Well, I mean, if you and I think I mentioned this in the interview 5 years ago, and I know we're supposed to be talking about video game cartoons here, people, but come on. If you look at Cheetor's evolution, he goes from being like a young kid a teenager to an adult. So even though you're doing essentially the same type of voice, you're changing the tones as the character ages.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I got to admit, and that was one of the few shows that we knew going into it that there was going to be this arc. We did not know that there was going to be a Beast Machines, but we knew that there was going to be a clear progression in this guy. Like, he was going to start out young, cocky, impetuous, and then eventually, kind of become heroic. I didn't know how that was going to unfold, but it did, and it was great. It was, it felt like acting.
Absolutely. All right, well, any other thoughts from the panel? Anything else you guys want to say before we close this out?
Not that I can think of now.
Ditto.
Okay. All right. Well, we'd like to thank Ian for joining us. Coming up next on Pixels in the Animation, we're going to get to episode 55 and 56, which is more Mega Man reviews. Who knows who we'll get next? Maybe we'll get Mega Man's little energy buddy Eddie on this show. Been trying to do that for 6 years.
McNeil,
the elusive Eddie.
Oh, yeah, you have no idea.
I met him at TFCon a couple years ago.
Yeah, you should have hog-tied him and brought him back home with you.
I tried.
All right, folks, thank you again so much, Ian. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Pixels in the Animation.
Thanks, everyone. It's always a pleasure.
This is Mega Man, and you're listening to Pixels in the Animation.